This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In this talk, Reggie discusses the two aspects of an awake heart, absolute bodhicitta and relative bodhicitta. Absolute bodhicitta is the limitless space of our hearts, and relative bodhicitta refers to the warmth that arises from that space and is expressed as love. This talk was given at the 2011 Winter Datun Retreat, held at the Blazing Mountain Retreat Center in Crestone, Colorado.
So there are two aspects to the heart that is awake, that is not sleeping. The first one is the sort of ultimate awakeness. And do you know when we did the practice of the thousand petal lotus, I said in the middle there was an empty, there's this sort of empty core. Remember that? That's what's known as ultimate or absolute bodhicitta, meaning a kind of radical openness, that the ultimate nature of our heart is actually openness. It isn't a thing. It isn't an energy, although a lot of things and a lot of energies come out of that openness, but our heart ultimately is that very deep openness, absolutely receptive, unencumbered, brilliant space, which is right at the center of our being, right here. And then interestingly, out of that space, you know, when we touch it, when we explore it, out of that space comes warmth. Now, we've been exploring this theme a lot. You know, we've been talking about the initial heat of the universe that happened when this universe began 15 billion years ago. You know, the so-called Big Bang that arose out of the absolute nothingness that preceded it. We've been talking about it in terms of our experience of the earth as a way of touching that. Well, in terms of the human heart, that human heart at its very center has that exact same space of absolute openness where nothing is determined and everything is possible. And then out of that begins to arise warmth. And this is what we feel when we visualize the warmth coming up from the earth and flowing through our heart. And that is what opens the petals. It's the strangest thing that when you touch absolute nothingness, the next thing that happens is love. There's a story told about a Thai forest monk named Acharn Mun, who lived, I don't know, 100 years ago. And he was a very ardent meditator. He lived in the northeast Thailand in the forests and meditated and was very, very ardent, and he was a real ascetic, and he really shunned ordinary life and he shunned ordinary people. And, you know, people would try to go see him and study with him. You could never find him. And he, you know, he had a few disciples around him, and at a certain point, the last vestige of his sleepiness fell away. And initially there was absolutely nothing. There was no him. There was no world. There wasn't even any concept of mind or enlightenment or achievement. It was this very same absolutely open space that we've been talking about. And this Dhaton, hoping to introduce you to in some different ways. And this is from his biography. And then, it was like nothing was ever going to happen again. That's how deep that space was, that openness. There was a knowingness that it was so deep that the ego would never, you know, any sense of motivation or any sense of doing anything would never happen again. And it was an ordinary person to experience that would be completely freak out. They couldn't handle it, even for a split second. But in his case, there was nothing really to react against it. But then what he says is, out of that space came absolute, total shock of love that arose toward everything. And he knew that's what his life was for, to express that. And he completely changed as a person, and he spent the rest of his life just being with disciples and going into the villages and, you know, helping people and working with them. And that's how it goes. That's why for us, you know, we talk about the initiatory experience of meditation. And you know this yourselves, you know, 10 times a day, you hit the wall, it's not working, you get depressed, and you give up. It's never going to happen. I hate myself. And then even that falls away. And you're depressed. And then even that falls away. And all of a sudden there's nothing. And then something can happen. Rebirth. And we know it. You know it happens 10 times a day. It happens throughout our whole journey. And dying is painful. Dying is painful. Always. So, in terms of the working with the heart, we touch the openness, and we're going to work with that a little bit today. We're going to work with the utter openness, which is ultimate bodhicitta. And then, deeper we go into the ultimate bodhicitta, then more effortless the energy of life and of love flows out of that space and opens our heart and wants to flow out to the world. When we are willing to touch that absolute and radical openness, then the energy that comes up is not ours, as we've been working on. And the prospect of loving other people becomes inevitable. It's something we have to do just to fulfill ourselves. That's why this Vajrayana Tonglen is so different from the conventional one where you try to crank up love. When you let love come through by doing these practices, your life, in spite of yourself, becomes a raging torrent of love and compassion and tenderness and kindness for other people. So, one thing that I'm going to just mention, and we'll talk about it later, because my guess is it may be coming up for you. I already actually touched on it briefly, is that, you know, when we feel that depth of care and concern and love for other people, and when we see it's not ours, I mean, that's a moment. It stops you. You don't know what to do with it. You never thought of that before. We always thought that it's up to me. I have to do it. You know, if I do it, I'm a good person. If I don't do it, I'm a bad person. And, you know, if I have a moment of kindness, that means I really must be actually okay. And, you know, all that kind of conversation just falls away. It's irrelevant. And when we feel, you know, that love is really something that is coming through us and it's not generated by us, it really stops us. We really don't know what to do, but we do know it's the right thing, and we do realize that's what we want. And the petty kind of self-generating love of the ego doesn't, it's not interesting anymore. And it doesn't really have much to offer us. So, you know, we do the practices on the cushion, and, you know, I'm so happy that we've got 3.5 weeks, you know, still to work on these. I mean, this is the happiest Dhaten I have ever taught. And I feel so blessed to have this opportunity with you, because I've been chafing at the bit for a long time, and here we go. But as, you know, as the sort of experiential feeling unfolds, then there's this kind of really important thing that happens. We realize that when we get up off our cushion and we're, you know, just in our day, things really get in the way. Isn't it true? You know, something happens and we shut down. And I don't know how it is for you, but for me, often what happened wasn't out there. It was like some memory came up, or some little paranoid thought about somebody else. You know, they didn't do a thing. They did nothing. And all of a sudden, I'm off and running. And the next thing I notice, my heart is shut down. And it's simply, where's the kindness? Where's the love? I'm not even aware of the other person. I'm so caught. And this, you know, this is really interesting, because when I first started doing this practice, I didn't really quite figure it out. You know, I didn't really think about, well, what about the world? It was more like, just want to develop the practice. And then the next step was, in my relationship with Caroline, it was obvious, you know, how often I would shut down. And on the one hand, with her experiencing, you know, a tremendous amount of openness and love and tenderness, you know, incredible, unbelievable. And I would think, well, that's it. You know, obviously I'm just going to be like this, you know, forever with her. But then, you know, 20 minutes later, something happens and, you know, the portcullis comes down and it's not there. So I've been working on that. Been really working hard with Caroline and you know, trying really hard to work through, you know, some of those tendencies. And, you know, I think it's, you know, it's coming along. But then recently what I've noticed is that kind of shutting down process actually happens all the time. And it happens throughout the course of a day. And what we consider normal behavior, mostly in my case, most of my normal behavior is a response to shutting down. So this, you know, I don't know how it is for you. We'll have to talk about it. But the interesting question is, how do we bring the fundamental openness of our heart and the natural spontaneous love that's there? I mean, it's there, you know, it's who we are. How do we bring that from our practice into our life, so that our life, our relative ordinary daily life, reflects that, and that we can be with somebody who's difficult, and we can allow that openness to be there in a steady way, and we can allow the affection to be there, and the warmth and the love. At that point, we need to begin to talk about our trauma fields. We all have trauma fields. We all have these very early experiences that set the pattern of our life, and mainly our traumatic responses, you know, to our life. And before the end of this Dhaten, I'd like to find a way for us to really talk about that, because this is where the Vajrayana is different from a lot of conventional Buddhism, at least in Asia. The difference is that often to experience the openness of the heart, to be able to go into the unborn mind, is considered the goal. But in the Vajrayana, as I've been saying, we have to transform our relationship to relative reality, and that is really where the journey happens, in relation to other people and situations and the emotions that come up and all the ways in which we're damaged and shut down. That's the world that has to be transformed. And we have to do it as individuals, and we have to do it as a culture. We have to find ways to transform the relative aggression and suffering and passion and greed, and then we have to do it for the planet. And for the Vajrayana, until we are willing to take on the deadness and the aggression and the lostness of the relative world, we haven't completed the journey. So I want to talk about that before the end of the Dhatan. I want to spend a little bit of time looking at how we can really fundamentally transform the damaged parts of ourself. Let's awaken our hearts. That's already huge healing. And then let's take the next step of how we heal ourselves totally. In the Vajrayana, the healed person, the person who has integrated the fundamental nature, the unborn mind, the love of universal compassion with his or her karmic situation, that's called the Vajra body, which I've referred to. It means an embodiment that is free and that reflects the teachings, reflects the lineage fully, and that all the darkness has been resolved. So we'll do that. But in case you find that when we do the practice and then you come back and you try to, you know, like get along with your snoring roommate or, you know, your rota mate or, you know, deal with Orioki and you just shut down, what I want to say is that that's part of the journey. It's a very important part. And it's something that we're going to need to address as we move along here. Generally speaking, the protocol that I've been teaching you, the Bodhicitta protocol, which is the 10 points practice done for, you know, 5 minutes or whatever you want, 30 minutes. The going down into the earth and then bringing the energy up and opening the heart. That's a very good thing to do every day at the beginning of your practice. And the reason is that if we simply sit down and start to try to meditate, let's say you're using the out-breath dissolve technique, you sit down and do it, you're not in your body, and it's not going to go very well. And people have told me that when they don't do the protocol, it takes them maybe an hour just to get into their body. Do you know what I'm talking about? So the point of the protocol is that it short circuits that whole hour of simply trying to get back into your experience, getting out of your conceptual mind. So what the protocol does is it actually takes the conceptual mind, puts it over there, gets you into your body, and opens your body and opens your heart. And then when you meditate, something can happen. You know, you can be much more in touch with your actual experience. And as I was saying before, the experience is what changes you. Your human experience changes you. That's what, it's the only way people change. They don't change by doing practices. They don't change by doing techniques. They don't change by reading books. They change by opening themselves to their own human experience and by going through what they go through. Human experience is the journey for human people. So all of the things that derail us from our experience, you know, addictive behavior is a way of not experiencing all the addictions that we have and the multitude, really, you know, in the course of a day, whether we identify ourselves as addictive people or not. Pretty much most of human life is going from one addictive behavior to the other. Addiction means trying to hang on to a certain kind of pleasure or security, and that shuts down our experience. It's interesting that one of the things I've been thinking about, you know, through my whole teaching career is the impact of drugs and alcohol and other addictive behaviors on the spiritual and psychological development of young people. You know, as a teacher at Naropa and at CU, I worked, you know, with a lot of young people, many of whom you know, just to try to survive, would smoke pot two or three times a week, or you know, drink, you know, a really a great deal. And the research suggests that addictions as such cut off neurological development. That, you know, if you're using anything, you know, even like shopping or, you know, compulsive work. So it's, we're not just talking about drugs and alcohol, we're talking about any addictive behavior. What happens in the normal course of the, or let's say the healthy course of the human person, is that you come up to your edge. You come up to this boundary where your current ego strategy doesn't work. And the emotional reflection of that is anxiety. And what happens with anxiety is a passageway where you have to let go. You have to let go of your current way of doing things, and you become a bigger person. That's how growth happens. But if when you get to that point of anxiety, you have a drink, you go shopping, you go back to work, you smoke dope, then the anxiety all of a sudden is, you've cut the throat of your own development. So, you know, that's it's really interesting that that behavior is rampant in modern life. And, you know, people can't grow up, literally cannot grow up. And as I mentioned, you know, often in my teaching, there's kind of a consensus among social anthropologists and social psychologists that, you know, the average mental, emotional age of modern people, particularly in America, is maybe about 14, 13 or 14. That's as far as they get emotionally. Can't get beyond that. And the reason is because the rampant addictive behavior in our culture that is, of course, you know, it's driven by advertising and our consumer economy and, you know, our industries and our educational system and TV, and, you know, so it's driven by a lot of things. But because of that situation, people simply cannot grow up and they cannot go through the life stages that we see in other cultures. It's just very interesting. It's very, really makes you stop and think a lot, you know, about how are we going to help this world that we live in, this modern world, and what can we do, you know, to have a positive influence. So we are, the interesting thing about the heart is it's not, the brain is addictive. The left brain is an addictive mechanism, which is very, very interesting. The human heart is not addicted. So what we're doing is, by opening our heart, is we are coming into a state of being that is free from addiction. And then, interestingly, we can go back and we can begin to look at the behaviors that we all have. You know, I was saying before the break that we need to take a look at all the behaviors we have that actually interrupt the journey that happens when our heart is, when we listen to our heart and follow our heart. And really, you know, number one, awaken the heart, and number two, then we start looking at our life and we can change things. You know, that's a lot of what the path is about, is the more we learn on the inside and on the cushion, then the more we begin to see how the outside is not helping us. And then there's a very natural process of letting go of what doesn't work and letting go of what gets in between us and the person that we really, you know, want to be and feel most deeply we are.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Our music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Kechog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.